asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances.
So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking unethical Costco customers, payday lending on steroids, and are you rich?
That's right, buddy. This is our Friday flight. We're going to talk about the best personal finance stories, or even like the tangentially related personal finance stories. Those are the ones we're talking about today. Happy...
We'll coerce it into being a personal finance story.
Happy Friday before the Super Bowl, everybody. Happy Super Bowl Eve.
Woohoo.
Joel, I know you're excited to see your Chiefs.
No.
Have you adopted them as your team?
I mean, if my father-in-law's listening. Of course I have.
You and everybody else?
I will root for them because my father-in-law is a fan, has been a fan for a long time. But I really don't care, let's be honest.
Yeah, I don't. I'm actually kind of embarrassed at how little I care. Like, it almost feels like annoying. Because folks are like, oh, I don't even care about... Like, I kind of feel that's sort of how I am. But it really doesn't hold much weight for us. Like, yeah. We might turn it on just from, like, the cultural standpoint with T-Swift possibly making... Ugh. Like, will she make it there on time or won't she?
That's what I care about the least. I'd rather watch the football than that.
There are a ton of different prop bets going around as to what it is she's going to wear. What's the color of her lipstick or what shade?
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Will she cry if Travis Kelce catches a touchdown or the Chiefs win the Super Bowl?
Will he propose to her after the...
Right.
These are the things I don't care about.
Well, I will say, like, that's... You and I, we've talked about sports gambling on the show. We're not in favor of it. And I think it's one thing to go to Vegas once a year to spend a grand or something like that and can call it part of your entertainment budget. It's another thing to have it like in your pocket all day, every day, tempting you to spend and waste money.
It's where it becomes insidious.
Yeah.
And it like works its tendrils into your psyche, your being.
How much of a nation of degenerates are we when we're gambling about what color lipstick Taylor Swift is going to wear? Or like those prop bets just made me think that the gambling and gambling on your phone at your fingertips
has gone
more haywire.
So this is what's so crazy about that. The fact that there are so many of those bets, it's fascinating because you would think that the folks out there who are Swifties, who are fans of Taylor Swift, that they're not the ones betting. In my mind, at least, the typical Taylor Swift fan isn't somebody who's also gambling on their phone doing sports betting. So what it is...
Because they're preteens.
What that tells me is that it's the folks who are into normal sports betting who are also, like, divergent and now becoming obsessed with this. It just tells me that they're really into gambling.
That could be.
There's more ladies watching
the NFL these days, and maybe those ladies are also seeing the billionth FanDuel commercial, and they're like, oh, cool, now I'll get on there and bet on other stuff, too. I don't know, and I'm not sure how easy it is to make these kind of prop bets, but all I know is stay away from gambling this weekend. Enjoy the game if you want to. I think I'm going to watch some of it, maybe the first half at least. Yeah, and if it's a good game, I'll stick with it.
Culturally speaking, I feel like I might. What is it even on? I don't. Is it going to be on like ABC or something like that?
Oh, I don't even know yet.
I don't even know either. That's the thing.
I'll figure it out.
I'll find a way to get it on just from a cultural standpoint, yeah, just to see what's going on.
And I think
the spectacle.
I think it's also streaming on Paramount Plus, and you can get a free 1 month subscription to stream it.
So there you go.
Pretty sure. But let's move on, Matt. Let's get
to the real money stories, Joel.
That's right, to the real stuff. This was just fodder at the beginning. All right, let's get on to the Friday Flight. We talk about DIY investing regularly, right?
We do.
Kind of something we think most people can accomplish without the need of an expensive financial advisor. And picking retirement funds, it's not one size fits all necessarily, right? Like, you can't just be like, oh, this one fund makes sense for every single person on the history of the planet at all times. Not necessarily so. It depends on a bunch of different things, but it's also not rocket science, right? Like, you don't have to be some sort of like Wall Street suit with like a multi-$100,000 a year salary in order to make good investing choices.
Yeah, you didn't need to be reincarnated as Munger, with his mind.
Yeah, if only though, right? But personalized retirement plans, or what's also known as managed accounts, are kind of in vogue right now. They're expanding to 401ks across the country, but they come with a cost. So you might start to see this option available to you in your own 401k, but those higher costs of picking the managed account are going to eat into your returns. And interestingly enough, Matt, a lot of managed accounts tend to look really similar to the ridiculously cheap target date fund you could have purchased off the rack instead. It's like Nordstrom Rack, right? It's like you go there and you get a much cheaper than going to the real Nordstrom, I guess. That's what I'm told.
And you're like, wait a minute, this suit looks just like the one that was made for me bespoke.
It's just, you know, 30% of the cost of the nice one. And that's according to new data from this company called Aon. Basically, they looked into a lot of these managed accounts and they found, wait a second, they're almost the exact same thing as a target date fund. You're just paying a lot more for the privilege. So you're likely going to hear these pitches for these accounts in the near future if you haven't already. But your likely response should be, no thanks, because they are a solution, in my opinion, in search of a problem that target date funds seem to have already solved.
That's right. Stick with the funds out there that are charging very little when it comes to expense ratios. Anything from the free to the 0.03. Maybe all the way up to like 0.3, even 0.5% if you're getting into something a little more specialized. But beyond that, we would recommend for you to shy away from those funds.
Those target date funds might go 0.12, 0.15, but still, that's reasonable in comparison to what you're going to pay with the managed account.
Exactly. Yeah. So actually, this is a good time to issue another warning about investing in single stocks. I don't know, perhaps even worse than managed accounts. We typically advise against armchair stock picking, and we've got a good example here for you. 23andMe. You've heard of 23andMe, Joel, right?
Yeah. I haven't actually tested it out, though, because I'm pretty sure my heritage is Norwegian. I don't really need to look.
Well, there's like other like genetic kind of stuff, and you can learn stuff about your family. Actually, it's really funny. We were joking with some neighbors of ours, and we've been talking about getting 23andMe for Kate and his wife, because evidently their parents are from the same small town.
Oh, really?
In West Virginia.
Oh, that's
so we keep joking that they're like long lost half sisters or something like
24th
that.
Cousins, however that works out.
But everyone has heard of 23andMe. With it being so ubiquitous, the company should be pretty valuable. It should be worth investing in, right? Well, no. That's totally wrong. The stock was worth $6 billion a few years back, and now it's worth next to nothing.
It's literally a penny stock.
It's down 98%, and it might actually get delisted from the NASDAQ, and they've apparently gotten out over their skis in attempts to develop new offerings. They're creating new drugs, which is evidently difficult and expensive.
Yes.
They're just burning through a whole lot of cash, but it doesn't even matter. Like, we don't need to dive into their specific problems, because remember, even a good product that you're familiar with, that doesn't mean it's a good enough reason to invest in that particular company.
Or a company you believe in, and well, they've got something new that you think is going to actually bring them a lot more subscribers or revenue. It makes me think of like a company like Disney. And if you look at Disney stock, Matt, it's been basically, if you had invested 5 years ago in Disney stock, you would still be underwater on that stock today, despite them launching Disney Plus, despite all the Marvel movies and stuff like that. You would think, oh man, this is going to bring a lot of profitability, and therefore, I'm going to make money by investing in that stock. And guess what? I'm familiar with Disney. Moana 2 in November is going to be the jam. And I think those are the kind of things that often appeal to people from a single stock investing perspective, but most of the time, it ends up in misery. Maybe you were the lucky person who said,
you're speculating.
Oh, Nvidia 4 years ago. But for the most part, single stock investing is going to lead you astray, and you're going to miss out most of the time on the big winners. If we had perfect foresight, I mean,
yeah,
we could all invest in the big winners, but it's easier said than done.
Yeah. Okay, so speaking of Disney, evidently, is it March 14th? They're going to start cracking down on password sharing.
Oh, that's right.
Disney, ESPN Plus, Hulu, so they're all following Netflix's lead when it comes to limiting who it is that you can share share your password with.
If I'm banking on their profitability, that is one thing I will say is probably going to leave.
So?
Well, it worked for Netflix.
It worked for Netflix, but I am a little more skeptical because I think Netflix had first mover advantage, right? Everyone's sharing, and then all of a sudden you've got one of these streamers, and they're like, hey, by the way, you're going to have to start paying, and you're thinking, that's okay, no big deal. I split 5 streaming services with like 2 of my friends and my parents. And so like, if I have to pay for one of those, that's fine. But as more streamers start coming on board and start limiting who, like what it is that you can share, like you're going to get to a certain point to where you're going to say, no more, that's I am right. not willing. Or maybe you're just like, I don't have time to watch all of these different services. And so you start eliminating. In this way, I feel like Netflix is kind of a brilliant move for them to go ahead and do that. Like you put yourself out there.
You draw some of the ire.
Yeah, because a lot of folks were like, what the heck? But I mean, I think everybody knew that it was coming. And now everybody else is trying to follow suit. And I would not be surprised if the share price, specifically of Disney, since they own ESPN Plus and whatnot, that they won't see as much of a significant increase.
You're probably right. But more people are likely to ditch them because now there are a lot of people are paying for a Netflix account that they didn't used to have to pay for, and they're like, can I take on another streaming?
But that being said,
monthly streaming service,
Disney
payment.
Like, I feel like if there's any service that any parent of children is going to keep, it's going to be Disney.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one.
Yeah.
All right. So, but just definitely a warning against investing in single stocks. It's something we talk about regularly. And we're going to bring on a friend though who does invest in single stocks in the near future on the show because I want to hear his perspective.
That's right.
We always want to hear how, and he's very thoughtful about it. So, I guess it's just the armchair. Oh, cool. Let me invest in the stock that I'm semi familiar with or the brand I like that can lead you astray and potentially help you lose a lot of money. All right, let's talk about economic outlooks. There's been this conundrum in American life, and it's extended to our finances, Matt. For some reason, despite solid economic data, basically everywhere we turn, Americans seem to believe that the economy isn't in good shape. The belief doesn't necessarily match up with reality in a whole lot of segments of our economy. And so even though the interesting thing is most Americans will say that they themselves are actually doing quite well. An Axios poll found that 63% of Americans rate their current financial situation as being good, including 19% who say it's very good. So the majority say, I'm doing great. But then another recent survey found that 76% of Americans rated economic conditions as negative. So they say, I'm doing great, but the economy sucks, which is kind of a weird juxtaposition, right? That you would believe both those things at the same time.
It's kind of like politics where someone's like, oh, I hate politics, but I like my representative.
That's right. Yeah. They bring the pork home.
Everyone's
right?
got like that home, I don't know, hometown bias. I don't know what you call that.
I think that's right. And I think that's what's going on here. But yeah, most folks, for some reason, think that they're crushing it when everyone else isn't. And you know, the overwhelmingly negative feelings persist despite these personal claims of, I'm doing great. And they're at odds with each other, I think. But as David Brooks wrote in The Atlantic this week, he said, doomsaying can be a self-fulfilling prophecy. And I think we just live in a culture now where doomsaying is the norm and everyone's participating in it.
That's true. Okay, so there was another study from Bloomberg that reinforced this in a massive way, specifically the sort of disconnect between how it is that folks are doing and what their perceived reality is. So they surveyed 1,000 objectively rich Americans. We're talking about folks who are earning more than $175,000. And at least a quarter of those folks identified as either very poor, poor, or getting by, but things are tight.
Can you imagine making that much money and saying, I'm very poor?
It's crazy. I mean, Bloomberg, they say that the vast majority of these folks, they actually own a home. They've got a good job. They've got solid savings for retirement. Like, essentially, they're living the American dream. But for whatever reason, it just doesn't feel like it, at least to them. And so that should lead to the question, like, why is that? And I think there's a lot that's been written about how maybe it's media. I mean, I think we're pretty big believers that social media is oftentimes leading to some of this decline.
Traditional and social media, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and social media from the standpoint not only of comparison, right? Whether it's comparing yourself to others, not only in real life, but also online. And that is so easy to do when it comes to social media. I think that has a large part to do with it. And I'll even confess that the social media impact on me personally, like I think for me, it has less to do with the actual comparison part of it, right? Like it's not like I see some guy driving a sports car like online and I think, ooh, I want that. Gimme, gimme. Although for me, it's probably like, oh, look at that sweet gym that that guy's building out in his garage. But I don't think it's the comparison as much as it is the distraction. It's the fact that there's always something there that keeps us. It keeps our eyes off of what is actually before us, the things that truly do bring about a fulfilling life, whether it's the people or the things we have. Like, literally, we can just keep this isolated to possessions. Like, think about all the great stuff you have. Think about the awesome home that you have. And when we don't take the time to appreciate those things because we're constantly distracted, like we're constantly being entertained, I think that can oftentimes lead to this sort of feeling of, yeah, we're just getting by. Yeah. We barely have enough to make it. Well, no, like, take a step back from your life and look at actually what you have. Look at your beautiful family. Look at just all the different things that a decade ago, or even like as college students or high school students, we would have said, oh yeah, if I had all that, oh my gosh, like that sounds amazing. I would be so happy. But because we're just in the grind and just constantly being distracted, we can't like lift our eyes and see that at all.
Yeah, I think that's a really good, I think, way to approach this is to go back to your 10 years ago self. How would you have viewed where you ended up?
Like going back in time. And
I have to do that all the time, because when I start to think, oh man, like I'm doing okay, I look back and I'm like, dude, 29-year-old Joel would have killed for this situation.
Like, literally, 29-year-old Joel probably wouldn't have believed you. You'd be like, that's not possible.
Right, exactly.
I can't do that by just talking into a microphone.
Right. And just, yeah, you know, loving my kids. I mean, just a great life that we've built here. And I know not everybody has what we have, but guess what? There's a whole lot of people who have a lot. Going back to this Bloomberg study you pointed out, that just don't believe that they do, even though objectively they do, right?
Yeah.
And I think the other thing about social media, it is some of that is a tug at like, oh, here's what you don't have. But the other part is we amplify the angriest, most divisive voices.
Oh, yeah.
And because of that, it leads us to think that things are worse in our society than they actually are.
When you walk down your street, the extreme nature of social media.
When you walk down your street, when you talk to your friends and neighbors, you probably don't get any of that junk.
Everyone seems so balanced.
Yeah, no, we're just in tune, though, way too much to the kind of internet side of things and the most divisive voices, that if we just get out there in the real world, it'll probably cleanse us of a lot of that, those feelings that things are worse than they actually are.
Totally agree. You know, so I was just thinking about how, like, again, we're just distracted by everything. It makes me think of the new Apple goggles, the Vision Pro, and I'm like,
got myself three pairs.
Yeah, please. Like,
they're worth more than my car.
Initially,
man.
I was like, "That's so stupid." But then you start seeing some folks like post reviews, and they're like, "Oh my gosh, this is so amazing." And there's a temptation to get sucked into that because it is amazing, like what they're able to accomplish. But dude, this herein lies another distraction, literally, that keeps your eyes off of real life.
Mm-hmm.
And so not only is our attention being robbed, but yeah, they cost a lot of money. It's like $4,000.
Yeah, $3,500, I think.
Yeah, you can end up in a whole lot of debt trying to find yourself on the bleeding edge of the adoption curve. Yeah,
maybe wait till like version 4. And even then, I don't know, maybe real life has more appeal. All right, let's talk about money stress, Matt, because that impacts our lives in ways that go beyond just our budgets. And so for people who are actually maybe not doing as well as they'd like to be doing, that money stress can hang over your head. Or if you're just spending more than you make, if you don't have great money habits,
because you're buying the latest and greatest Apple tech.
Right, yeah. that money hangover, because you're spending more than you make or because you're going into debt, can have an impact not just on your finances, and we know this, but actually on your physical and mental and cognition levels too, on your productivity. There's this new study conducted by researchers at the University College of London, and they established a connection between stressful life events and a decline in biological health. They said that individuals facing financial stress were 59% more likely to be in the high-risk group for heart disease, depression, and other illnesses a few years down the road, just like 3 or 4 years down the road. And so this is just another confirmation. We've talked about this before, how kind of having a lot of financial stress on your plate can kind of reduce your IQ by something like 12 points. You're like walking through life a little bit dumber because of the stress that's weighing you down mentally. But it's not just a mental degradation. It's also potential physical side effects of poor money habits and the debt that you've built up. And so I just suggest sometimes the solution is more money, just building up that emergency fund and having a budget, knowing where your money is going, ensuring that you're not throwing it away in ways that you aren't even aware of, like, Matt, potentially those subscriptions that we talk about, right? Most people underestimate the number of dollars that are going towards subscriptions every month. And if they would curb those, hey, they'd have more money in their lives. But you might also need to talk to a professional. Financial therapists are worth checking out if you feel chronic money stress. We had our friend Asia Evans on recently.
That's right.
She's awesome. And maybe maybe it's time to talk to a professional if you feel like you're chronically inundated with money stressors that are, you know, weighing on you heavily, both mentally and physically.
That's right, man. Yeah, couldn't agree more. And by the way, we've got much more show to get to. We're not just going to talk about how we feel and how we think about money. We've got some more maybe practical, solid takeaways as well. We're going to talk about what it means to be a Costco cheapskate. We'll get to that plus more right after this. When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. That's why you listen to this podcast. And if you're looking to upgrade your wallet, you need to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. If you're paying for vacations with whatever card is in your wallet, you could be missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table.
You can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade, lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
All right, Matt, we're back. Friday Flight continues. Let's get to our ludicrous headline of the week. We do this every week. It's always something that we find around the internet that just kind of sounds ridiculous, and we get to pick it apart. So it's one of my favorite things to do. This headline comes from CNBC, and the headline said, "Why one expert called earned wage access payday lending on steroids." And you and I, we've talked about this before. It's essentially like it's a fancy term for getting paid before you should. And there's apps that'll help facilitate this, right? That will help you get your paycheck earlier than you otherwise would. So, you know what? I don't want to get paid on Friday. I want to get paid on Tuesday. Well, you can go to Earnin, Dave, Bridget. There are a bunch of different apps that'll let you do this.
Which getting paid slightly earlier, there's not that. Well, what's wrong with that? Well, it's the fees that are associated with
that. That's right. Yeah.
It's not the fact that we're against you getting paid. What was it? The micropayments? Was it when maybe Uber or Lyft started doing that?
You can cash out on the day.
On the day as opposed to like waiting for a paycheck in a couple weeks. It's not that. It's the fact that you are having to pay for that access.
That's right. So I don't mind if you drive for Uber and Uber's not like charging you a fee to get paid early. Well, cool. Take your money that day. That's fine. Like it doesn't matter. It's the fact that people are paying essentially what equates to payday loan rates to access their funds earlier. And these things are growing like gangbusters. Like millions of Americans are getting addicted to payday coming early. And like you said, Matt, there's almost always a fee involved. And if you were to extrapolate that fee, these folks would be, really the interest rate would be something in the payday loan region, something in the 300 to 400% range much of the time. But the reason these apps are able to kind of skirt government regulation is because they operate on a voluntary tipping model. And most people are like, cool, you're going to help me get my paycheck early. I'll tip you 10 bucks. But if it's 10 bucks when you're getting 120 bucks and you're just accessing that a few days early, this is the kind of thing that can really put people behind the eight ball, especially low wage earners. Like if you start living on that cycle and needing your money the day you earn it or even before you earn it, this is the opposite of an emergency fund.
Yeah.
This is the opposite of good financial hygiene.
Yeah, yeah. Were there to be an emergency, like we don't want you, like essentially what you're doing is you're reaching into the future and grabbing hold of money from future you. You're like robbing yourself as opposed to like dipping into the money that you already have. There's almost like a theological difference here between like reaching and striving versus like resting on something that, that has already happened, something that you've already done. But that's certainly more of the path that we want you to take. And not only that, but the money that you do keep aside, you're going to get paid for that because of where interest rates are these days and I think high yield savings.
We might see more and more employers offer you the ability to get paid closer to when you actually work, closer to the day you earn the check.
Yeah, not against that.
Yeah, but the problem is, is your money being seasoned? Kind of like we talk about with, you need a budget with that app. That's how they talk about it, seasoning your money. If you're dipping into future earnings to pay for current bills, that's a problem. If you're dipping into money you earned last month to pay for bills this month, that's a much better place to be.
It's a completely different mindset, yeah. Could not agree anymore, dude. Let's discuss A Frugal or Cheap, and this actually could have been the Ludicrous headline. And by the way, not all Ludicrous headlines are headlines we disagree with. Like with the last one, we agree with the fact that it's like payday loans on steroids. It's like payday loans with like a mask on. It's like a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Yeah.
But this is a story about a woman returning a couch to Costco after 2.5 years. And this is one that we vehemently disagree with. She filmed herself and she put this on TikTok, dude. And in the video, she highlights Costco's generous return policy, which we also love. We also talk about this.
Yes.
But what she said that I didn't love was that you can just return.
Not from a schemey, smarmy perspective.
No, but just from like, this is a good company. Like literally, we love Costco. We love how they do business.
We talked about couches last week, by the way. This is 2 weeks in a row talking about couches.
What was last week?
That was the garbage couches. This couch, it turns out there wasn't issues. This thing wasn't falling apart or anything like that.
No, no. She wanted to return it because she just didn't like the color anymore, I think is what she said. And dude, that is just not in the spirit of Costco's return policy. And granted, this is something that you can do, but that doesn't make it right. It definitely falls into the cheap category. It borders on unethical. And in her video, she's saying that, like, I haven't returned it yet, and I'm nervous, and I don't know why I'm nervous. I know why you're nervous, because you feel bad about what you're about to do. That's called your conscience.
Your Jiminy conscience Cricket conscience is
speaking to you, and you should have listened to it.
Yeah.
As opposed to, man, looking like a fool and just taking advantage of a generous return policy. I hate it.
Yeah, and Costco has that generous return policy because they trust their members to use it honestly and not abuse it. But every once in a while, one of these stories comes up. There's people returning like used tires years after the fact I don't know if Costco still accepts that or not, but fortunately, almost nobody does this except for this lady on TikTok, right?
And so, and the fact that she did it so brazenly and filmed it as well, that's the part that
it's like,
I don't know what's worse, the fact that someone might do it like sneakily and just be like, okay, I'm just going to
publicize it.
Or the fact that she just felt the brashness to go through with this like on social media, and she's doing it for the likes and the views too, obviously.
Probably. Well, and Costco had to amend its electronics return policy years ago and reduce the return window to 90 days because of the way folks were abusing it. They were taking
for a computer upgrade.
Yeah, the 8-year-old computer, and guess what? Guess what goes down in price over time? Computers, right? And so the 8-year-old computer, you probably paid $5,000 for it, and now the laptop's $700 or $800, and so you're like, give me my $5,000 back and I'm gonna buy this thing that's $800 that's far superior to the thing I just had. And so it's the truth is, if Costco members pulled stunts like this regularly, Costco would have to make their fantastic return policy far more meager. They would have to roll it back for everybody, which sucks, right? So Costco is a good company. This lady on TikTok, sorry. You're abusing generous policies, and it's not cool. We won't stand for it.
Yeah.
Not that I'm going to make a citizen's arrest or anything. Well, but
like, while it is allowed, the reason we're talking about it is because we don't want this to become commonplace. Because, yes, you're going to spoil the party for everybody if people are out. It's like when L.L. Bean when they stopped doing their lifetime guarantee. Because that's what everybody started to take. Bringing back stuff that was like decades old. Like people were even
buy stuff at the
thrift store and bringing that back. Yeah, trying to exchange it.
Also not in the spirit of the policy.
No. And look what happened with them. Yeah. Another great company, and they ended that policy. Do you know you can return food at Costco too? Have you ever returned food?
Yeah, just something that was like went bad really quickly, or we have returned like one thing that my kids just found disgusting.
But I'm going to share something because
we rarely do that,
and it's no problem too. Well, like if you accidentally buy something, I guess, like if you get a non-perishable, no, it's no problem. They'll return it, see that it's sealed. They'll even put it back out on the floor. But if you return perishable foods, they have to toss that out. And I actually learned this the hard way. So I was picking up some food. It was some steaks. And when I got back in the car, I checked in with Kate. And she was like, oh, I already got that. And it's not like these steaks were on sale or anything. So I was like, oh, well, no big deal. I'm already here. I'll just return it. No harm, no foul. And so I did feel a little weird because I'm like, oh, how is this going to work? And she didn't ask any major questions. She was like, anything wrong with it? I was like, no, I just miscommunication with my wife, returned it. She credited my account. And as I was turning to leave, she's like, you know that we have to like toss these out because they're perishable. And once they leave the building, dude, I felt so bad. Like I was like, literally, I mean, I was horrified. I almost like tried to buy them back because they're going to have to toss those. But I didn't know that. Like, even though it had never been opened, they can't resell the item. And so I told her, I was like, man, there's nothing wrong with this. I didn't know that. I hope somebody here, can one of y'all take it home for free? Because they're good steaks. They're ribeyes. But I just didn't know. So I share that somewhat embarrassing story.
You wouldn't do that again now.
No. Yeah. I'm not going to do it again ever. Well, dude, you know how I am with food waste and leftovers. Again, I was horrified and I'm a little embarrassed even sharing the story. But I want everybody else out there to know.
Because
we want Costco to stick around, you know?
Yeah, for sure. We do. We love Costco.
To not get destroyed by idiots like me unknowingly or folks who are
random
trying to take advantage of the company.
On TikTok. All right, let's talk about car insurance and let's talk about what happens when auto insurance rates go up. Well, what happens is more drivers opt to forgo coverage altogether, which is not a good thing, and it's certainly not something we suggest, but it's also kind of the reality on the ground. Rates have risen substantially in recent years, and we've talked about this on the show, largely because of how complex cars have become. I'm thinking electric vehicles right now, right, Matt?
Sure.
Electric vehicle rates, car insurance rates have gone through the roof because, well, hey, that thing gets in an accident and the whole battery pack needs to be replaced. That's a really expensive repair.
And even just like the nav systems that go into these cars. I mean, they are computers on wheels.
Yeah, basically. They're more expensive to fix than they were 10 or 15 years ago.
Definitely. Sure.
And part of that's just inflation too. And then J.D. Power, they just found that there are more uninsured drivers because of rising premiums. Roughly 6% of folks on the road now are illegally driving with no insurance. That's the national average. Matt, don't go to Mississippi. 30% of folks in Mississippi are riding without insurance. I didn't make that up. That's literally J.D. Power, okay?
That's some shade you're throwing.
Not trying to hate on my Mississippi brethren, okay? I visit Mississippi on the reg. Like that place. But what does this mean for you? Well, there's even more of a need for you to have sufficient coverage.
Yep.
And make sure you have uninsured motorist protection while you're at it. It's not required in every state, actually. I thought it was, but it's not. And it might feel annoying to pay for more coverage to like insure yourself against other idiots that don't have coverage or something like that. But the protection is even more necessary now. So, yeah, it's
because that includes like hit and runs as well. Because guess what? If somebody hits you and it's their fault and they don't have insurance because it got too expensive, so they dropped it, they're gonna take off.
Yeah,
and that's an uninsured motorist coverage covers that even if the person's no longer there.
And the chances that you get left in the lurch are higher than they've been in a long time because of
these
rising costs. By the way, I'll just tell a personal story about me saving on car insurance recently. I noticed I went back in and looked I'm with Liberty Mutual, so I've been with them for a while, and I was like shocked at how much my car insurance recently went up.
Mm-hmm.
But I was watching your kids. I was babysitting at your house, and I was like, how am I going to be productive tonight? I'm going to find ways to slash this car insurance amount that I pay. And I saved myself $600 a year in just a couple hours.
Did you end up hopping to a different provider or did you talk to them?
I stayed put. I talked to them and there was a couple of things that had rolled off my account that had been discounts.
Ooh, some discounts. Yeah. Like what?
Okay. So there's one that almost nobody talks about. Nobody really references, which is taking a defensive driving course. And so I literally on my phone, not even on a laptop, took this defensive driving course, paid $25 to save $400, okay?
What?
Yeah, wait, but $400 for 3 years, so it's going to be a $1,200 savings.
So you did that while we were out on our date night?
That's right.
Oh, shut up. Oh, yeah. That's great.
And so it took me about 45 minutes to complete this, what they call a six-hour course, but I'm speedy. And so I did that. And then,
but not while he's driving, everyone.
No, not while I was driving. I was sitting on a couch. But that is one
of
those...
No, speedy, not while you're speed driving your vehicle. You're speedy.
That would
be the opposite when it comes to insurance.
Well, the other thing...
Is that your other discount?
Well, that's the other discount.
No citation?
They're tracking my driving now for 90 days.
Oh, dude. I will 100% let my insurer track me if that leads to a discount.
You get an immediate 10% discount. And then after 90 days, somewhere between an additional 5% and 30% discount. So nice. I'm already saving $600 a year, and I might save even more.
That being said, don't pull in behind Joel when you're in traffic, because he can be driving slow.
That's right.
Slow to accelerate, slow to brake, baby.
I'm granny driving hard right now. But those are just like, honestly, really low-hanging fruit that could save you a bunch of money in no time.
I need to do that. All right, everyone. You know we like credit cards. You know that we like earning the rewards that come along with using them wisely, and wisely actually being the key word here. But we try to convey the downsides of credit cards as well. We try to shoot straight. We try to give both sides of the stories. And 50% of Americans, they do not pay their bill on time and in full. And because of that, credit card debt, it's wreaking havoc on their financial life. It's obviously a problem. We try to paint the full picture, the pros and the cons of credit cards. But there's another con that we should discuss as well, and that's actually redeeming travel rewards, because earning those points, it can be exciting. You kind of hit those thresholds. It kind of feels like you're playing a game. But spending the points that you've accrued, that can evidently be downright frustrating to some folks.
Yeah, I guess it depends what credit card you have and what you're trying to redeem those points for. That is why some people do prefer, I think, Matt, the cashback cards, just general 2% on everything. Automatically hits your statement credit or something.
Historically, I've always been just a flat cashback kind of person.
Yeah.
Except for the fact that we're now entering a stage of life where we can travel more. And if you play your cards right, man, pun intended there. But if you play your cards right, like, there is significant advantage, but it does take a little extra legwork.
It does. And so you're right. I was kind of same thing. Like, the 2% cashback, why not just go with that one? The Fidelity card is a great one. The Citi Double Cash, those are great, just straight up 2% cashback. If you don't want to think about it beyond those, and you don't want to have to, like, figure out, well, how do you redeem rewards to optimize them to the fullest, that's probably going to be your best bet. But credit card redemptions can be fraught. And the Wall Street Journal had an article about the price discrepancies between booking a flight on a site like Google Flights or booking it via like a credit card reward portal like Chase's or Capital One's, right? And so, yes, you are using points, but the markup on what you'll pay via the credit card portal, well, it can be a good bit higher than what you'd pay with cash directly to an airline or hotel if you opted to go that route instead, which essentially makes those rewards less valuable than you wanted them to be, than you hope they would be. And so I think it's a good idea when you're booking a vacation, when you're booking a hotel or a flight via a credit card portal, always check the cash price on other sites too to see what the difference is. Because I haven't typically, Matt, on my own, found a massive disparity between the price of a hotel on the credit card rewards portals versus booking them directly. I always do look to see. Yeah, same thing with flights. But just check, right? And if there is a big discrepancy, maybe you do pay cash on this occasion or use that credit card to gain even more rewards when you're making that purchase. But and then maybe just wait to use your points until the credit card portal is offering a better rate on your next trip. But it's just something to watch out for.
Yeah. Yeah. Look for the good deals. Don't wait too long, though, because don't forget that airlines can devalue points potentially. I was actually talking to a buddy
at
the gym.
There's inflation on that, too.
Yes. Yeah. Like, I was talking to a buddy at the gym, and he's got like an insane number of points that he has set aside. In his words, he said, they're just bacon. I'm just like, well, you want to be careful, because inflation is real when it comes to the points. And these airlines, they're like banks who are issuing their own currency, and they can just change the value of those points, like, on a whim. Was it last year that United...
Delta, too, right?
Delta, and they increased the number of points required to redeem... I think it was specifically those international flights. But that's something that they can... Obviously, they're not going to do it, like, an egregious amount, because then they're going to really upset their customers. But that is something that does happen over time. So just keep that in mind as well. Generally speaking, better to use them. Smoke them if you got them. Like the kids say.
If you overbake it, it's going to get dried out and nasty, right? And so, yeah, you want to use those points. You don't have to use them immediately, but you definitely want to be looking for opportunities to use the points you've earned. And the longer, when I talk to people, Matt, who are like, I've just built up this massive reservoir. It's like, you want to start using them.
Yeah.
For sure. Or they're not going to go bad, but they're going to sour just a little.
Yeah. I can't believe I said what I said earlier. Use it or lose it. How about that? Is that better?
There you go. We're not Gen Z. We're not that cool. All right, Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. We'll have links to everything we mentioned, the stories that we mentioned, up in our show notes at howtomoney.com. And if you haven't signed up for the How to Money newsletter, go check that out. howtomoney.com/newsletter. Chock full of good information in an accessible format. So
that's right, man.
Please do sign up.
And we'll see you back here on Monday with a fresh Ask How to Money episode. So, buddy, that's going to be it for this one. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.